After perceiving the moonshine, Maharaj Bharat continued speaking like a crazy person. He said, "This dear son was so submissive and dear to me that due to its separation, I am feeling separation from my own son. Due to the burning fever of this separation, I am suffering as if inflamed by a forest fire. My heart, which is like the lily of the land, is now burning. Seeing me so distressed, the moon is certainly splashing its shining nectar upon me, just as a friend throws water on another friend who has a high fever. In this way, the moon is bringing me happiness. Purpoi brought his divine grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. According to Ayurvedic treatment, it is said that if one has a high fever, someone should splash him with the water after gargling this water. In this way, the fever subsides. Although Bharat Maharaj was very aggrieved due to the separation of his so-called son, the deer, he thought that the moon was splashing gargled water on him from its mouth, and that this water would subdue his high fever, which was raging due to separation from the deer." Translation again. After perceiving the moonshine, Maharaj Bharat continued speaking like a crazy person. He said, "This deer's son was so submissive and dear to me that due to its separation, I am feeling separation from my own son. Due to the burning fever of this separation, I am suffering as if inflamed by a forest fire. My heart, which is like the lily of the land, is now burning. Seeing me so distressed, the moon is certainly splashing its shining nectar upon me, just as a friend throws water on another friend who has a high fever. In this way, the moon is bringing me happiness. Om Aganita Damandasya Ganajana Sarakaya Chakshir Nitam Nimatasma Shri Gurave Namaha. It's amazing how many times the word I and me is used in this one verse. And from this, we can detect something of the deviation in the spiritual life of Maharaj Bharat. After perceiving the moonshine, Maharaj Bharat continued speaking like a crazy person. That's Shukadeva Goswami's. Now he's quoting Bharat Maharaj. The deer's son was so submissive and dear to me that due to its separation, I am feeling separation from my own son. Due to the burning fever of this separation, I am suffering as if inflamed by a forest fire. My heart, which is like the lily of the land, is now burning. Seeing me so distressed, the moon is certainly splashing its shining nectar upon me, just as a friend throws water on another friend who has a high fever. In this way, the moon is bringing me happiness. Srila Prabhupada wrote a little pamphlet about I and mine, traps of illusion. So it appears that Maharaj Bharat has become deranged due to separation from the deer, due to intensive affection for the deer. But we can see by the number of times I and me, which indirectly alludes to mine, is the real problem. His affection has really become too much himself, in his own feelings, in his own satisfaction. And the deer was simply the object. So Maharaj Bharat has become mad, and we heard yesterday some discussion of how his madness was very similar externally and superficially to the madness of the devotees feeling separation from Krishna and everything, the earth, the footprints, the moon, reminding them of their beloved. The difference is the object. The object of the devotee's love, the devotee's madness, everything is Krishna. Whereas for one who's deviated from the path of Krishna consciousness, the object is really themselves, which expands to those things which it sees as related to itself and its own satisfaction and pleasure. But this is selfish and self-centered. And therefore, there are certain distinctions. This kind of madness does not take one closer to Krishna. It takes one away from Krishna. Whereas the madness of the devotees, the separation of the devotees, actually brings them closer to Krishna. That meditation on Krishna actually contains Krishna, actually makes the love and relationship with Krishna deeper and sweeter and manifest within the heart. So it is not that, Srila Prabhupada says, it's not that affection can or should be mitigated. That's not possible. You can't live without some affection. Reciprocation, giving and receiving affection, you can't live. But the object has to be changed from oneself and its objects to the object of the love of all souls, which is Krishna. And that keeps things centered, balanced. When the self becomes the center of our consciousness and our affection, everything is off-center and out of balance. Just like the concentric circles created by dropping pebbles in the water, it makes waves that go out in circles and they never collide because the center is the same. If you drop pebbles in different places in that same pool, the waves are colliding with themselves. There's conflict. In today's world, everyone wants to think that the United States is so powerful, a sovereign superpower, that we don't have to worry about anyone causing us any difficulty. We're just too powerful. And regardless of how much propaganda is spread in that regard, people are so insecure because in our own homeland, the terrorism created by the enmity with America, Americans saying that they're the axis of evil, they're saying we're the axis of evil. And what's all this conflict about in the Middle East? One devotee met a professor, and they had some discussion on this topic, and the professor said, it's obvious that there's three reasons for the conflict in the Middle East. Petroleum, petroleum, and petroleum, which is like synonymous with sense gratification. This big high-tech mechanistic, of course what it is today's version of what we find in Krishna Lila under the name of Shalva, the deceptive nature of technological and scientific invention. So people may say that, well, technology is neutral. You know, it's good if we use it for good purposes, and it's not if we don't. It really is not neutral. What was it created for? It's created for exploitation and advancement of sense gratification. Of course, Prabhupada used all things, because in this high-tech world, you need to use a thorn to remove the thorn. But it's not inherently neutral. It's inherently created for exploitation, which always goes under the guise of advancement and love. The biggest dramas in the world is all under the label of love. But Jagadananda Pandit, 500 years ago, made it so clear. Everyone is talking love, 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 but they'll never know what love is if they don't understand the nature of the dealings between Krishna and his devotees. Because that is centered in that central point of Krishna. Prabhupada says Krishna is the central, pivotal point of all loving relationships. Without that center, there'll be conflict. And what goes on in the name of love is just so temporal and ephemeral, and just a big song and dance of love over the reality of exploitation and wanting to fulfill one's own senses, that it can't last and it can't satisfy, and it just creates more and more dissatisfaction, frustration, and loneliness, leading potentially to the madness we're seeing here in Maharaj Bharat, when his temporal, fragmented, loving relationship ended, which they have to, because it's not based on the eternal reality of the soul. So there's many important lessons to be learned in this chapter of Maharaj Bharat. The one that's very consistently resounding through Prabhupada's instructions is the necessity for association of devotees. Maharaj Bharat renounced the association of his angelic queen and godly opulences and affectionate surrendered subjects to go to the forest in pursuit of self-realization. But his problem was he had no association, which is obviously a problem, because we can all be deluded. But we're not going to all be deluded together. And therefore, if someone's deluded, his God brothers can say, Prabhu, this is improper and inappropriate, and it needs to be adjusted and corrected. But even more significant than that is we need loving exchange. We can't live for long without it. If we have it with devotees, it's centered on Krishna, and it takes us to Krishna. And it's eternal in that sense. Our loving relationships are eternal because they're all going to the same place where they'll eternally continue. Whereas the temporary affection between conditioned souls, which is based on the body and the mind and the infatuations of the imagination, they don't last. You know, people used to take this vow when they get married, is that it'll continue until death does them part. Now, nobody can make it till they die, hardly. If married people stay together till they die, they consider that successful. Well, what kind of success is that? They died. It ends there, because it's just a relationship of bodies. Well, how much love can be exchanged between the bodies? They're so temporary and limited. But they have their value. The human form is precious because it's designed for self-realization. And the human affections are also precious if we understand them properly. The limited and fragmented affection the jiva souls can offer one another gives us a glimpse, an indication an encouragement, if we see it properly, to pursue the unlimited and unfragmented love of God, which we can't do alone. We need that association. We need the collective enthusiasm, support of association. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada labored tirelessly, endlessly, to create the ISKCON for the association of devotees. And he recruited from the Western world souls to make an institution. Now, we all know that institutions have their problems. And creating an institution for the propagation of Krishna consciousness from recruits made from the West is just asking for all kinds of headaches and problems. Prabhupada knew that very well. But without that, the association's not going to go on. And it's not going to be widespread. You know, people may leave ISKCON to join, you know, this camp or the other camp. But what's going to happen to it when that leader goes to another world? And they're just going to seek some other kind of association that enlivens them and lack the continuity that we need. So Krishna says, Bhoktaram yagatapasam savalokam maheshwaram suradam sarabhutanam gatamam shantam ichati. This is the peace formula. By understanding that Krishna is the supreme proprietor of all planets and demigods thereon, the supreme beneficiary of all sacrifices and penances and austerities, and most of all, the supreme, eternal, well-wishing, best friend of all living entities. By understanding this, we can attain peace from the pangs of material nature. Maharaj Bharat, symptomatically we can see, was not peaceful. Of course, you can say the gopis were not peaceful. You could say the Prabhupada was not peaceful in terms of the headaches he experienced trying to run this institution. But that is a superior kind of peace beyond the realm of tranquility we know as Brahmajyoti or even Vaikuntha. The anxieties of loving dealings brings us closer to Krishna, purifies the heart more and more of the selfish impurities which blocks loving relationships. The essence of all instruction is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. And with that foundation in our lives, we can appreciate that if someone enters your life, it's not by accident. Nothing happens by accident. There's a purpose and a meaning behind everything which we may or may not utilize or perceive. But if someone comes into your life, it's not an accident. And you can see it as an opportunity, and you can make it a precious opportunity to share the love, to remember the love, and cultivate the love of our common source. Because everyone and everything comes from Krishna. We're meant to return to Krishna. And affection can help us in that course if it remains centered on Krishna. If Krishna is the central point of all loving relationships, all our thoughts, all our deeds, all our relationships, then everything helps us return to Krishna. So this is a crucial item to remember. If you want to show affection, offer it first to Krishna, the root, from where it will be disseminated to all the parts and parcels. What does this mean? On the one hand, it means if you offer your love to Krishna, then automatically, spontaneously, you will develop love for all living entities. It has another meaning also. If a Vaishnava develops affection, some kind of special affection for some living entity, Krishna takes special care of that soul. We see this in the case of Shivananda Sen is very prominent in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He had so much affection for that dog. And everybody must have been wondering what's going on. And then, you know, he would pay the tolls for the dog to cross the rivers. And, you know, he was so concerned that somebody was feeding the dog. And then when it disappeared, he was all disturbed. When they reached Jagannath Puri and saw that the dog was got there before them and was eating Lord Gauranga's remnants, they were all so delighted. And then the next day when the dog was again disappeared, no one felt anxiety. They felt joy because they knew he went back to Godhead. Special affection. Shivananda Sen had special concern for that dog. Not by accident. Some kind of, you know, past thing brought them together. And some kind of great fortune. Lord Gauranga, as a child, you know, little Nimai, saw a litter of puppies. And he and his friends started, no, and his friends didn't. They were condemned. What are you doing? We are brahmanas. We don't touch dogs. We don't play with dogs. And he didn't care about that. In fact, he liked to touch dogs. Then he'd run after Mother Sachi. No, get back. Because, you know, he liked to make it clear that her smart perceptions were not pleasing to him. Because, you know, whatever religion or process, there, if it's true, there'll be basic, you know, underlying. Precepts, although the superficial rituals may vary. If we concentrate more on the superficial differences in rituals, that creates dogma. If we concentrate more on the same foundation for all religious principles, it creates a feeling of brotherhood and friendship amongst all jivas. So Mother Sachi was, you know, she was married to a high-class Brahmin, and she was very astute about her concepts of purity and impurity. And to make it clear that the shortcomings of the smarta perception, little Nimai, he loved to, you know, touch dogs or sit on the compost heap and then go to hug Mother Sachi and she'd run away. No, what are these concepts of impurity? This is all due to your deluded intellect, Mother Sachi. Who is this child speaking like a sage to me? So one day, he got this little puppy out of a litter. And it's, what are you doing? We are Brahmins. We don't touch puppies. I don't care. He's mine. I accepted him as mine. And then he made a little leash and he walked him home and he tied him up, and Mother Sachi was not at all happy having a dog in the house. But she, every time she thought of letting him loose, then images of Nimai's anger was lost. She couldn't face that. So she put up with it. But when the mother dog came looking for her lost puppy and then he went and joined his family, Nimai came, where's my puppy? I didn't let him go. And he's looking on. You did? What did you do? He said, what did you do with the best of the puppies? I didn't. So then Mother Sachi, just to prove that she didn't let him go or get rid of him, she said, she started searching through all the villages, all the forests, all the, she said, Nimai, I promise your dog will be back home today. She didn't understand the prophetic nature of her own words. Because while she was looking, and Nimai was looking, down Navadweep, this little puppy began acting very uniquely. He stood up on his rear paws, raised his front paws in the air, and began chanting so sweetly the Hare Krishna mantra. And in no time at all, he had formed such a huge kirtan party, which he began leading through the streets while dancing with upraised paws. And then they came to the one town square. huge Mahaharinam Sankirtan in a circle around this puppy who's jumping up and down, singing so sweetly. And then just around dusk, when the sun had just gone down and the rays were fading, it was starting to get dark, the puppy fell over backwards and just lay there on the ground motionless. And everyone was thinking, is this some kind of divine ecstasy or what's next? And they looked, was he dead? And everyone's looking, and then their eyes turned upwards as a golden light in the sky. This is from Lochan Das Thakur, Chaitanya Mangal, by the way. Golden light in the sky, more brilliant than the sun or the moon or anything. And then, from within that light, an object became visibly clear. It was a chariot drawn by magnificent steeds and with huge domes and bells and mirrors and canopies and flags. And it was descending. It came down and landed right next to the puppy dog. And then the passengers on that chariot were exquisitely beautiful. And with magnificent grace, they descended, picked up the dead puppy, and by their touch, he was transformed into a celestial, spiritual, human form. They carried him onto the chariot, put him in the seat awaiting, and then took off, went back into the sky. And by that time, even the demigods had joined in the assembly. And as that chariot ascended, the demigods were offering prayers. As they watched, it went right past the heavenly planets, and they could see this. By some special blessing, they could see it went right past the heavenly planets, right through the Brahma Jyoti, right past the Vaikunthas, and landed on Goloka Vrindavan. And the demigods were praying that this is so exceptional that this puppy has attained Goloka Vrindavan because of the special affection of this Nimai Pandit. Goloka Vrindavan, which cannot be achieved even by the following, the Yuga avatars, who can take us to Vaikuntha or at most Dwarka or Mathura, has been excelled by this puppy due to the special affection of Nimai Pandit. So the special affection of the Vaishnavas is the expression of the love of Krishna. So when they have some special affection, and I'm not talking about a bodily or sentimental type, I mean some special concern for whatever, family member, stranger, someone they marked out because of their desire for hearing and chanting or serving or whatever, Krishna takes special care. Of course, the pastime of Kaliya is exemplary. Of all the demons killed in Krishna Lila, Kaliya was the worst. He killed the cows and the cowherd boys by his poison, and Krishna brought them back. He killed the Brijabasis by his poison. He tried to kill Krishna. He didn't get killed. He got delivered. He attained a spiritual form in Goloka Vrindavan, where, you know, if sometimes Garuda is tied up and Krishna needs a ride, he jumps on Kaliya, rides through the forest with the cowherd boys. What a blessing. Why? Because of the prayers of his wives, who were devotees. They couldn't stand their husband, Kaliya. They thought he was just so obnoxious, and he was. But they were always praying to Krishna because they were devotees, to purify him, which he did. So the affection of the Vaishnavas means Krishna takes special attention upon that fortunate soul. So the deer are such a wonderful species. They're so gentle and humble, and they're are such a prominent simile and allegory and decoration in Krishna's Leela. You know how they love to hear, they put those ears up. So if you chant Hare Krishna to them, look at their ears. They're like cups drinking their nectar, and beautiful big eyes. And are often used as a simile for the gopis, very gentle features, their doe-like eyes, gentle, humble, non-envious demeanor. And deer are very much attracted to flute song. You know, with those big ears, it's indicative of their inclination towards sound. Their ears, they're very much attracted to flute song. And in the holy place, no one is ordinary. In Vrindavan, in a holy place, one of the first offenses is to commit violence to any of the residents because you don't know who they are. All the sadhana siddhas in Vrindavan Leela had formerly, and that includes the deer, the animals, the trees, they had formerly somewhere, sometime in the creation, attained the shelter of a Vaishnava. Familiar with the Gaudiya teachings. And by that, by following those instructions, they attained birth in Vrindavan. There was an assembly of devotees in an ashram who were discussing amongst themselves, is it really necessary that sadhana siddhas take birth in Vrindavan in Gokula before going to the spiritual world? Why can't they just go straight to the spiritual world? But they'd heard that they don't. So they were discussing and they couldn't really get the right understanding, so they approached their Gurudev and, taking his permission to inquire, asked, is it really essential that sadhana bhaktas take birth in Gokula Vrindavan, meaning somewhere in the material realm where Krishna is performing his lila, before they go back to Goloka? And he said, yes, it is essential. And then citing Sanatana Goswami, who's described all these things in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, explained the necessity of taking birth on the earth, even if one is coming from Vaikuntha, to attain Goloka Vrindavan, one has to take birth on the earth to be trained in the association of the Vaishnavas how to perfectly serve Krishna. And the Guru Maharaj explained to the devotees, first of all, that the material body is too fragile and limited to contain the force of Krishna Prem. And therefore you have to, you know, take another body which can actually contain that divine force to cultivate that perfectly before going to Goloka Vrindavan. And Goloka Vrindavan is not, but then they inquire, well, why can't you just get your spiritual body in Goloka and then, you know, continue to perfect yourself there? And the Guru said, no, Goloka is not a place for attaining perfection. It's not a place for anyone who is imperfect in any way. That's the place, that's the function of Gokula. So then he said, so then one of the devotees asked, well, why can't we just learn from the Nitya Siddhas and then go to Goloka Vrindavan without having to take another birth in Gokula? And he said, well, there's two reasons. There's a twofold answer to that question. One, which I just explained, there's no scope for any imperfection or limitation in Golok. But more important than that is, if you were to just, you know, give up your body here in the material world, even if it was almost perfected, even if you had reached the stage of bhava as had Maharaj Bharat, and tried to develop prema by learning from the Nitya Siddhas without having to take birth, again, you couldn't do it, because then your relationships would lack continuity. And the guru explained to the devotees that if somebody just appeared as the daughter of a cowherd man in Goloka Vrindavan, how would he explain, you know, his friends or neighbors come and, well, who's this new kid? She just appeared. I don't know who she is. That's very impersonal. Kids just don't just appear like that. Children are born to parents and develop relationships and are trained in relationships how to relate to Krishna. So he explained that you take birth in a cowherd family in Goloka Vrindavan and develop the relationships which cultivate your devotion, love for Krishna, and then from that birth in the cowherd family in Gokul, then you just appear in Golok, but there's a continuity of relationships. And there's a relationship between Gokula and Goloka. And there's an eternal relationship between the material world and the spiritual world, one being the training ground for returning to the other. So, when those devotees in that ashram attained bhava and were entering into the prema stage, Krishna directed Yogamaya to send them to Gokul, where those who became gopis were so disturbed by the impediments offered by their family in just going to Krishna that they took solace in the deer, who were so fortunate. You know, you hear these talks in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reenacted the whole thing. The deer, blessed are these foolish deer because they have approached the son of Nanda Maharaj. They're much more fortunate than us because they can go with their husbands, where we can't. We get stuck with all these tedious household chores. We have to wait till everybody goes to sleep to go meet Krishna. These deer are so fortunate. The wonderful thing about appreciating the fortune of others is you attain some aspect of that fortune. You know, envy blocks our progress. But if someone becomes fortunate and you appreciate that, that's the nature of Vaishnava, you actually attain your share of that fortune. So the gopis were appreciating the fortune of the deer, because when they would go to Krishna, their husbands would follow. They weren't in any way an impediment. They would follow, appreciating their wives' affection for Krishna, from which they developed their own affection for Krishna. But the really wonderful thing is that the gopis, who were so morose because they couldn't go to Krishna because of their families, attained the same good fortune, and their anxiety was dispelled. Their sorrow was dispersed just by remembering the deer. Not like Maharaj Bharat remembering the deer as, you know, it was so dear to him. But the gopis remembering the deer as being so dear to Krishna. So, when Krishna was wandering through the Vrindavan, I mean, he's always wandering through Vrindavan forest, and he's always asking the trees and the creepers and the vines and the grass, how are you doing? It's all, are you happy? Are you peaceful? Is everything? It's such personal loving exchanges. And when Krishna was approached by the deer, the gopis, who were so despondent, gained so much inspiration from Krishna's loving dealings with those deer. And you should know that deer, of course I live with them so I know, they have a long history of suffering as a race. I mean, this goes way, way back to the dawn of creation. You know, Brahma, not to get critical because he's way beyond our, you know, what we should criticize, but when he was chasing after his daughter, and she saw that so abominable, you know, he was lusty. She tried to evade the whole thing by assuming the form of a doe. And he became a buck. And then, you know, rather than criticize Brahma, which people know you're not supposed to do, they just kind of passed off the stigma upon deer as a race, as being an emblem of some kind of passionate lust. And then later, when that great mystic sorcerer, Marichi, was ordered by Ravana to assist him in the abduction of Sita, that whole pastime brought further disgrace upon that race. And then when Mahārāja Bharat, that great emperor, became such a sage, and then fell down from his spiritual path by affection to the deer, the deer, as a general race, were further condemned for ensnaring the emperor. And they thereafter preferred to remain hidden in the forest, haunted by the long history of anomalies which plagued their sense of self-esteem. But then when Krishna came to this world, and they were attracted by his flute, his touch released them from all sense of guilt and shame and fear. And they were reinstated as devotees and raised their noble heads once again. And then, when Krishna returned in his golden form, wandering through the Jarikanda forest, the holy names, that kirtan, none different from the flute song of Krishna, made everyone so peaceful that the deer were dancing with the tigers. And that made Lord Gauranga even more pleased that blessed is Vrindavan, the holy abode of the Lord, where even deer and tigers live together with human beings in transcendental friendship. Krishna appreciates the friendship, the loving dealings between the different jivas, but not when it's self-centered. That drags us deeper into the network of illusion. When it is performed for Krishna's pleasure, which was what Vaishnava relationships means, we don't do it for our pleasure. Our pleasure is a consequence. Krishna's pleasure is the sanctifying element and the foundation for something substantial. And then when Lord Gauranga reached Vrindavan, and the deer came and greeted back their old friend, and he told them, chant Hare Krishna, and all of Vrindavan forest perfected what Jarikanda had just performed. And when Lord Gauranga clasped the necks of those deers, tears of ecstatic love fell down from their beautiful eyes, their bodies shook, and they entered into the Leela of the Lord, and their unhappy past melted into oblivion. And then, the fulfillment, the conclusion, the perfection of the gopis' appreciation was reenacted 500 years ago, when the bucks it's male deer, not dollar signs. They followed the does. You know, the does went to Lord Gauranga first, and he embraced them, and the bucks followed their wives, and the gopis. I mean, Krishna Lila, Chaitanya Lila are integral to one another. They're not different things, they're different dimensions of the same. So when the gopis were appreciating how the bucks were following the does, appreciating their wives' devotion, the gopis became happy and hopeful that even with the impediments caused by their own family situations. And that actually happened. You know, when they were called by the flute song of Krishna, and their family members condemned them and forbade them to go, and the gopis went into the forest, what it meant was they were forsaking shelter of their families, who would feed them, who would protect them, who would care. They would be branded as unchaste, which is a fate worse than death to any cultured lady, because her whole sense of self-esteem and worth and dignity and value is destroyed. It's worse than death. That's the fate they were embracing by going to Krishna. But the wonderful mystical element is that when they returned home, their families welcomed them back and appreciated their devotion for Krishna, and shared in that devotion by that mere element of appreciation. So not to get off the point of Maharaj Bharat's going mad here, but rather than develop affection towards others because of the selfish enjoyment we gain from it, we should look to them as what can we learn. We should not look upon anyone or anything as to how to enjoy or how to exploit or what I can get from this person or thing for my own selfish pleasure. That is the trap of illusion, and I, me, and mine, which here we are hearing repeated in this verse, spoken by Maharaj Bharat, so concerned with his own self. He wasn't really concerned with the deer. He was concerned with himself, basically. We should look upon all, not how to enjoy, but what can we learn. Everyone and everything is bearing a message about Krishna. But it takes humility to decode the message. And with that humility in our hearts, then the limited and fragmented affection which jivas share can give us a glimpse into the unlimited, unfragmented, eternal love of Krishna. If we think, mistakenly think, that any jiva can give us real, substantial, whole love, then what we're doing is making mortals into deities. And this is really what Maharaj Bharata is doing. He's saying, blessed is the earth being imprinted with the footprints of this deer. That deer not only became his son, it became his deity. This is idolatry. If we think that mortals can grant us that affection that our hearts are yearning for, we make mortals into deities, which is a sure, certain formula for frustration and disappointment, because they can't do it. No jiva can touch the depths of our hearts, can understand the nature of our needs, and touch our fragmented, broken souls and mend the distress there. Only Krishna can do that. But Krishna works through his devotees. If we think that, like the neophyte mentality that, well, it's me and Krishna and I don't need these devotees and these relationships are just maya because I'm concerned with my love for Krishna, that's maya. Krishna is never alone. You can't approach Krishna alone. Prabhupada always condemned those pictures of Krishna up in the clouds all by himself. Where's his devotees? At least has to be a peacock or a deer or the Jamuna. Krishna's never alone. He's always surrounded by loving associates. And our entrance into that holy entourage is based by our relationship with his servants. Because Krishna takes special concern for the servants of his servants, those who are dear to his devotees. And that is really our only access into the spiritual world. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. The spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan exists in three dimensions of consciousness. Or two, really. That of Madhurya is Goloka. That of Odarya, meaning munificent love, is Avadvipa. There's no difference between Odarya and Madhurya. Each is contained in the other in full. But it's from the vantage point of the jivas, the Odarya, meaning the merciful expression of love of Krishna in the mood of his devotee, is more essential to us. So Navadvipa and Vrindavan are not different, just a different mood. Vrindavan being the mood of conjugal love, Navadvip, the abode of munificent love, which is not different, but has an added element of sharing and giving, and in that sense is actually superior, especially from our perspective, because it's only the mercy of Lord Garanga which can grant the entrance into Krishna and love. Krishna and Goloka. Bhakti is the bhava. Our sadhana must be flavored, if not permeated, with bhavana, which means the consciousness, the affection, what I'm doing it, why I'm doing it, and who I'm doing it for. If we don't have that, then our sadhana becomes, according to our perception, ritual. Okay, here I go, Govindam, Adipudrisham, and you fall flat on the floor, and then you go to the next altar, Tamaham Majami, and fall down flat again, and get up, and same thing every day. You don't realize you're singing the same words as Lord Brahma upon the revelation of the spiritual world and being admitted into that lila. But if you don't have, and it's all based on some affection, developing love, appreciation. I'm doing this for the pleasure of the Vaishnava as my guru. Then, by the mystical touch of affection, that dry imaginary perception of it all as ritual is enriched with a living, vibrant taste and flavor. So all this service that you're talking about becomes dry if we do not develop affection. And that affection is developed by remembering, what am I doing? why am I doing it? Who am I doing it for? It's all got to do with affection. It's all got to do with relationships. And if they are proper and rich, then our sadhana will never be dry. It'll never degenerate into what we perceive as dry ritual. Vaishnava relationships is what keeps it all vibrant and rich and pleasing to Krishna. Most important. It's a matter of following instructions. When we follow the instructions of the guru, we see the guru's instructions confirmed by everyone and everything. When we deviate from that principle, then we see our own concoction confirms everything. So it's a matter of adhering to the instructions of Guru. You go look at your... That's why we come together and chant Hare Krishna. We keep chanting Hare Krishna to remind ourselves that, oh my Lord, please engage me in your service. So we shouldn't constantly chant like a tape recorder. We have to remember what we're saying, why we're saying it, because we want to remember Krishna. And if you want to, then Krishna helps. Krishna says it in his own way, in the Adi Purana. Those who declare to be themselves devotees are not devotees. Those who consider themselves servants of my devotees are the devotees of my heart. Krishna loves his devotees. Krishna's Atmaram. He's self-satisfied. He doesn't need anything. But he loves his devotees. And when he sees one serving his devotees, that person becomes endeared to Krishna's heart. If you try to serve Krishna or please Krishna, Krishna doesn't need it. Krishna doesn't want it. And actually, it's a very arrogant gesture and concept to think that we can serve Krishna. Who are we to serve Krishna? Krishna is served by eternally liberated souls who are free from any tinge of selfish desire. Are we so elevated? We have no right to entertain such thoughts. The Vaishnavas are more compassionate than Krishna. They will take our tiny offerings and by their touch offered to Krishna with some devotion. And if we become dear to them by our humble submissive attempts, then by their mercy we can attain some actual love. If we think we can do without the devotees, we are very deluded. It's actually offensive to Krishna. Anything else? Yes? Yeah. Yeah. It's a very fine line and fine point. See, Maharaj Bharat developed affection for the deer. He was concerned about the deer's welfare and protection. These are all wonderful sentiments. The only problem, the only deviation, is that he kind of forgot Krishna in the whole formula. Used as a contrast, Shivananda Sen. Shivananda Sen was very concerned about that dog. But his concern guaranteed that Krishna would take care of it. Krishna is the only one who can offer any protection or any care or any affection to anyone. And he'll do that if that's the devotee's concern. If we make it our concern to give protection, to give affection, we're not giving anything but illusion. If we don't understand it's our service to Krishna, but he's the real protector. So we do our part, but don't think that you're the doer. Krishna's the doer. You're the servant. You do your part, and Krishna will do his. And then there is real protection. There is real compassion. There is real love. It's just a matter of keeping Krishna in the center. It's a very simple point, but a slight deviation from that just changes everything into a different perspective. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.